And off we go, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show goes now. Welcome back. Great to have you, dudes and dudettes. Rob Brown of the Great Milanzo with you on a Tuesday AM. If you want to be a part of the show, now is a spectacular opportunity to do it. The Renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone is open at 844-FANFONE, 844-326-3663. You can text us at 71307, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the air, FAN, F-A-N. Texas said the Cowboys need to have Bozo the Clown as a referee. Bozo the Clown was not a member of The Simpsons. You are thinking of Krusty the Clown. Krusty the Clown. Bozo the Clown. Did you? The Bozo show was, and I'm not saying this disrespectfully, so more your era than mine, right?
Okay, that is disrespectful.
What? Am I wrong?
It was way before me.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought he was on, like, in the 80s.
He may have still been alive and doing it, but I think he was, like, 50s, 60s.
I thought he was, because I remember seeing him on TV, but I swore he was more on in the 80s. Let's see. Now I have to look it up. Oh, you're right. He was on WGN TV, which is why I saw him, because we, for whatever reason, WGN Chicago was on in Shalimar, Florida.
It was in Ohio, too.
Yeah.
It was everywhere. It was one of those, the first cable channels before TBS, TNT, all that. Yeah, everybody had WGN.
The first iteration was a half-hour cartoon showcase titled Bozo that aired in the 1960s. It reached the 250,000 viewer mark in 1966. It carried on. All right, it carried on into the 70s and 80s and rolled into the 90s. When early Roy Brown, no relation, who portrayed Bozo the Clown, started having heart problems and stepped away from the role, they started having other actors portray Bozo the Clown and other characters that they started working into to make it less obvious that it wasn't the OG Bozo. Apparently, the show rolled up from 1963 to 1994. So it was all our generations, apparently.
Yeah. My mom was into it. So, you know, when your mom watches something, and back in my day when you only had one TV and you had to turn it yourself and all that stuff, it really happened, kids. You watch what your mom watched. So
that's fair.
So I watched it some because of that. But he was kind of old when I was aware. At least he seemed like he was.
That's fair. That's fair.
And I think Krusty was actually fashioned after
him. For sure. Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
What people thought the guy was like outside of playing Bozo, I think that's how they make Krusty.
By the way, I do have a correction to make. As Texter said, Jake Paul with more wins in Cowboys Stadium this year than the Cowboys, which is true. You know, but so does every WWE fan if we're counting scripted fights. I made a mistake yesterday on the show. I said that guys named Mike going into last night's game were 0-5, which would have made him 0-6. That is incorrect because Mike Elko, the head coach of the Texas A&M Aggies, does have a win at Jerry World this year. So guys named Mike are now 1-6 in Jerry World this year. So just a brief correction. I found accountability to be very important. I also find it very important at 7:04 in the morning that you guys are getting up, getting dressed, getting showered, having your morning routine, grabbing your coffee, getting in the car, headed to work, because you are 56 minutes away from having to clock in and lock in and ignore work to talk about sports. And if you're going to do that, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you need to know what's going on in the world of sports, my dudes, my dudettes, you need this. It's the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your friends, your family, whoever, your dog, whoever you spend time with at work. This is what you're going to be talking about. Let us dive right in with item number one. C.J. Stroud put up 257 yards, did not throw for a tutty, did not need to because Joe Mixon on 20 carries got 109 and three touchdowns on the ground as the Houston Texans hand the Dallas Cowboys their seventh loss of the season. Of those seven L's, five of them at the house. They have played five games at the house. They are 0-5 at the house. Cooper Rush was not bad. 32 of 55, 354, one touchdown, and one interception on the night. The problem was Cowboys couldn't run the ball. 64 total rushing yards for Dallas, including 28 on 10 carries from former South Carolina Gamecock Rico Dowdle. The Texans rushed for a 141 through for 257 on top of that. 54 yards for both Nico Collins and Tank Dell. Joe Mixon had 44 receiving yards. Former Alabama Crimson Tider John Michie had 33. So did Dalton Schultz last night for the Houston Texans. Look, this game was very simple. The Dallas Cowboys aren't good at football this year. The Houston Texans ain't. At least don't appear to be what they were last year. But as I pointed out, I expected a sophomore slump for the reason that there are sophomore slumps. A year of tape, a year of learning tendencies, a year for defensive coaches to figure out who you are. Of course, you're going to take a step backward in performance. The question is, can you go win still? 7-4 are the Houston Texans. They have done that to some level, staying towards the upper middle of the pack in the AFC. They will, of course, find themselves battling for the AFC South, likely winning it, though the Indianapolis Colts have not rolled over and played dead just yet with that one-point win over the Jets this weekend. The Cowboys are objectively hilarious at this point. And again, you're going, Rob Brown, there's a lot of bad teams in the NFL. Why do you keep dunking on the Cowboys? Well, it's because I told you so. And one of the fun parts of this job is that you get to make a big deal out of I told you so, and I told you so. A lot of y'all spent the entire offseason telling me, oh, the Cowboys are back, baby! No. I told you so. They're not. How'd they get better? They didn't, and it's showing up in the record books now. This is going to be a complete and total reset at the end of the year. Here's the fun part. The reason the Cowboys are bad are the bad decision-making processes of the general manager, Jerry Jones. Of course, if the owner of the Cowboys wanted to fire the general manager, he could. The problem is the owner of the Cowboys, and this is true. I've done the research. Also, Jerry Jones. And I don't know about you guys, but ordinarily, people aren't super keen on firing themselves, especially when they are the type of people who refuse to admit they've made a mistake in the first place. Hello, Jerry Jones. Cowboys fall at home to the Texans 0-5. At the crib, let's go to item number two. Paul Skeens and Luis Gil are your rookies of the year in Major League Baseball. Skeens debuted less than a year after being selected with the number one pick in the 2023 draft and was absolutely spectacular. 11-3, a 1.96 ERA across 23 starts. That lasted 133 innings. His 1.96 ERA was the lowest for any rookie with at least 20 starts in the live ball era dating back to 1920. It was also the lowest in baseball in 2024 amongst pitchers with at least 130 innings pitched. He had a .95 whip that was tied for best in the National League, recorded 170 strikeouts, a franchise rookie record, and he had an F-WAR ranked 10th amongst major league pitchers with that performance, selected as one of three finalists for the NL Cy Young Award, along with vets Chris Sale and Zach Wheeler. We will find out who the Cy Young winners will be tomorrow. Over on the other side, Luis Gil tallied 15 of the first place votes. There were 30 of them, narrowly topping Colin Cowser, who finished with 13 first place votes and 5 points behind Luis Gil. Oakland A's closer Mason Miller and Cleveland Guardians reliever Cade Smith each earned one first place vote. The five-point differential marks the second closest election in an AL Rookie of the Year race since the three-player ballot was introduced back in 2003. He'll entered spring training effectively as an afterthought, was slated to start the season in the minors because the Yankees had their starting rotation set, but He logged only four innings in A ball in 2023 after coming off of Tommy John surgery. But Gerrit Cole, the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner, was shut down because of an elbow injury. They didn't have anybody else but Heal. They called him up. What did he do? 15-7, a 3.5 ERA and 29 starts, led all AL rookies in wins, innings pitched, and strikeouts. His 1.82 ERA through 12 starts helped the Yankees navigate the club's 2.5 months without Gerrit Cole to start the season. He did solidify his spot in the rotation. He tailed off a little bit at the end of the season, but the start of the season was absolutely spectacular for Luis Hale and enough to carry him to the AL Rookie of the Year award. Again, the rest of our Major League Baseball season awards will be trickling out over the next couple of days. The next on the rotation tomorrow when the Cy Young Awards will be handed out. And the Atlanta Braves do have a name in that, as we mentioned just a minute ago, Chris Sale. I think Sale's also going to be up for Comeback Player of the Year award this year, no doubt. He was stellar for the ATL this year. Let's get to item number three. I don't know if this counts for all of you. I also don't particularly care. Team USA Soccer last night, 4-2 winners over Jamaica in the second leg of the CONCACAF Nation League quarterfinal. They do advance past Jamaica 5-2 on aggregate. They won the first game 1-0. They go away with a 4-2 win last night. Christian Pulisic had a goal in the 13th minute. He did have a second goal later in the first half. That first half goal was ultimately ruled to be an own goal for Jamaica. Pulisic took a cross, absolutely screamed it into the bottom right corner. It ricocheted off a Jamaican player into the bottom left corner of the net. FIFA did step in, CONCACAF stepped in, ruled that it was indeed a Jamaican own goal. So Pulisic credited with only one goal. Deshaun Bernard was credited with the second. Two more goals for the Americans. Ricardo Pepi would find his fifth goal in four matches. Timothy Weah in the 56th minute would cap the American scoring by absolutely blasting one that I am shocked did not find a hole through the top of the net. First half was a phenomenal first half for Mauricio's boys, specifically across the back line. In fact, I was texting friend of the show, Joey B. I went back and forth. I said, look, everybody's concerned, and justifiably so, about the defensive capabilities of this team. I think offensively, they're starting to round into shape, and one of the reasons why. Pochettino is a guy who says, I'm not going to play you in a rigid role. That was a Berhalter coaching strategy. Greg would say, I want you on the left wing, and I want you moving from the left wing. Pochettino's strategy is much more fluid. If you're on the left wing, but you see that there's the opportunity to move in the middle to help out the boys to open up the attack, move into the middle, rotate around. It's a lot more total football style than what Greg did, which was very formulaic, which was very rigid in terms of structure. Pochettino says, hey, we're going to take advantage of the spots that they give us here. You did it last night in the Americans' net. Four goals against Jamaica. They are on to the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals, which will take place in June of next year. They wait to find out their opponent. They wait to find out their seed. They wait to find out all the pertinent information to what comes next in the Nations League. But what matters the most is that they have moved on. Good news for the Americans as they put on a dominant display last night with a 4-2 win over Jamaica. Again, goals scored by Pulisic, Ricardo Pepi, and Timothy Weah. Pulisic would have had an own goal credited to Deshaun Bernard of Jamaica. But a 4-2 win for the Americans on to the Nations League semifinals next June. That is your water cooler cheat sheet, the stories that you need to know when we come back. In just mere minutes from now, we hand out some hardware. The awards of the week for college and professional football. We will run you through who picked up some fake hardware when we come back. Rob Brown, the great Milonzo, and you. It is the Rob Brown Show. It is the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show carries on. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you be a part of the broadcast. The renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas Fan Phone is open for you at 844-FANFONE. That's 844-326-3663. You can also shoot us a text on the text line at 71307, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the air. Texter said, are the American men finally going to be good at soccer again? Promising start for the tenure of new gaffer Mauricio Pochettino. We will talk about that
again
later in the show. Again what?
They're going to be good again?
Yeah, it used to be really good back in like the 1950s.
Oh, okay.
It's been a long time.
All right.
That was, I know for a fact, before your era, unlike Bozo the Clown, who was also in my era. We learned something new today. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to hand out some hardware. It is your weekly awards. Let's jump right in, and we will start in the land of collegiate football. The Colorado Buffaloes dump a 49 spot on the Utah Utes this weekend. Two guys that are catching one because what was on the stat sheet, and one because what was not on the stat sheet. Shador Sanders, 30 of 41, 340 yards and three touchdowns when it was all said and done. The other player I'm putting on here, not a stat sheet performance. Travis Hunter, one rush for 5 yards, five catches for 55 yards. So why is he on there? Because y'all, when I say I have never seen a defensive, I haven't in recent memory seen a defensive back impact the game the way that Travis Henry does, I don't know how to explain it to you. So I'll let Todd McShay do it. It feels that way. Dion's won me over. Travis Hunter, Shador Sanders. Catch a TMFINR award. Let's go to the Clemson Tigers 24-20 win over the Pitt Panthers. I went back and forth about where to go with this one. Kate Klubnik, 50-yard scamper to win the ball game when it was all said and done. Ended up 27-41 for 288, but I am handing that game ball to Antonio Williams. 13 catches, 149 yards, and both of Cade Klubnik's touchdowns. I'm going to tell you right now, Antonio Williams was making this offense work for the Clemson Tigers, and because of that, catches a TMFINR award. The 34-30 win for the South Carolina Gamecocks over the Mizzou Tigers. Who in the world else am I giving it to but Lenora Sellers, 21 of 30, five touchdowns, one interception, and 353 passing yards. Look, there's still spots that can be polished. There's still little aspects of Lenora Sellers' game that could be cleaned up by Dow Loggins and by Shane Beamer, but in a game where the Gamecocks had the opportunity to win their third consecutive against the top 25 team, Lenora Sellers came up big. Listen, Raheem Sanders, not one of his better games. 19 carries, 53 yards. I told you why that was. Mizzou had schemed to keep Rocket Sanders from getting comfortable. So what happened? Lenora said, don't worry, dog. I got you. Lenora Sellers catches his first TMFINR award. The Oregon Ducks escape the Wisconsin Badgers in this one, and they do it because of Jordan James. 25 totes, 121 yards, and the only touchdown in the contest. Jordan James shouldered the load. Everything we talked about with Cade Klubnik, with Lenora Sellers, these guys that put on the backpack and carried their team to the dub. Yeah, I'd like to see more out of an 11-0 Ducks team. I don't want them getting into a scrap with a 500 Badgers team. But ladies and gentlemen, welcome to college football. Every now and then, a team that shouldn't win does win. And it looked like the Badgers might have been able to find a way to make it happen. But Jordan James said, I got you, bro. Catches a TMFINR. Georgia, 31-17 winners over the Tennessee Volunteers. They stay in the category of two loss teams, and they stay in the category of teams very likely to make a playoff. Listen, this guy has not caught anything but flack all season, but Carson Beck's got to get a TMFINR award. 25 of 40. 347, a pair of touchdowns, also ran for 32 yards and a break it open tutty as well. Carson Beck's been getting the hell beat out of him, but I'll be dadgummed if Carson Beck didn't answer and catch a TMF INR war for the win over Tennessee. 42-21, Boise State knocks off San Jose State. I don't need to spend a ton of time on it. He did it again. 32 carries, 159 yards, and 3 touchdowns for Ashton Janti. If Travis Hunter doesn't win the Heisman, it's going to be because of Ashton Janti at Boise State. The SMU Mustangs stay undefeated in the ACC 6-0 after a 38-28 win over the Boston College Eagles. I went back and forth. Do you give it to the quarterback who went 24 of 35 for 298 yards and 3 touchdowns, Kevin Jennings? Do I give it to the running back, Breshard Smith, 18 carries for 120 yards and a touchdown? And what I decided was, give it to both of them. Kevin Jennings and Breshard Smith from the SMU Stangs. Catch a TMF INR award. Arizona State knocks off Kansas State 24-14. And I'm going to go ahead and say that Sam Levitt gets one. 21 of 34, 275, 3 touchdowns. Not the most impressive day by a quarterback, but he came up big when the Sun Devils needed him to. Sam Levitt catches one in this one. DJ Giddens from Kansas State, honorable mention, 14 carries, a buck 33, but the Wildcats fall. Louisville Cardinals fall to the Stanford Cardinal, just the one Cardinal. Whole flock of Cardinals over there, just the one card. It's the color, not the bird. Doesn't matter. Stanford gets the dub, and they do so on the arm of Ashton Daniels, their quarterback, 23 of 33, 298 yards and 3 touchdowns. This ain't a team that's supposed to be able to throw the ball, and he met Emmett Mosley the fifth. 13 catches, 168 receiving yards, and he scored not once, not twice, but thrice. Did Emmett Mosley the fifth, Ashton Daniels, Emmett Mosley, the tandem tag taming the Louisville Cardinals for the Stanford Cardinal. North Carolina, come on and raise up. They get to 3-3 in the conference with a win over the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. And once again, this is, I think, his fifth, sixth, 100th. I don't know. Amarian Hampton, running back for the Tar Heels, 35 carries. Lonzo, this is not made up. 244 yards on the ground for Amarian Hampton. Scored once as well. I told you at the beginning of the year, watch this kid, because this kid is a stud.
Last I checked, that's a whole lot of yards.
That is 100 yards twice and then 44 more. I did the math. Amarian Hampton, another Vindication TMF INR award. Where's my dog Keegan at? You got to answer, because I've heard the people putting down Peyton Thorne, the quarterback for the Auburn Tigers. All he did this weekend by going out against the UL Monroe Warhawks and helping the Tigers put 48 up on the board, the most they put up on the board all season. 286 yards and 5 touchdown passes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Count them. Fizzeth. 5 tutty passes for Peyton Thorne. Yeah, he wanted one. He got one. Let's keep with the TMF INR awards, but let's flip it up to the landscape of the National Football League. For the third time this season, Saquon Barkley carries the Philadelphia Eagles over the Washington Commanders last Thursday. 26-18 is your final. Saquon, 26 carries, 146 yards and 2 touchdowns. And in case that wasn't enough, he had 52 receiving yards in this one as well. 198 yards of all-purpose offense for Saquon Barkley. And the biggest disappointment was that he didn't hurdle anybody backwards this time. I haven't stopped watching it yet. It's one of the most unbelievable football things I've ever seen. The New Orleans Saints knock off the Cleveland Browns 35-14. They move to 4-7, 3-3. At the crib, and the Saints ain't dead yet. Part of the reason why, Taysom Hill. 138 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns, 8 catches for 50 yards. Also ran back kicks over and over throughout the day. 42 yards on a kick return for Taysom Hill. One of the most electrifying days in sports entertainment. Sorry, Derek Carr. Taysom Hill. for the New Orleans Saints is not real. The Packers pull it out against the Bears. They keep a 10-game winning streak alive and move it to 11. And part of the reason why Christian Watson, 4 grabs, which should not get you a TMFINR award, 150 yards, which absolutely does. There's very little going right for the Chicago Bears, but they do have a good defensive backfield. Christian Watson said, I don't care. Put up a buck 50 in the stat column and catches a TMFINR award. The 52-point scoring Detroit Lions may have broken the Jacksonville Jaguars. Lonzo, who do I give it to? Do I give it to Jared Goff for his 412-yard, 4-touchdown performance? Do I give it to David Montgomery, 15 carries, 75 yards, and scored twice? Do I give it to Amon-Ra St. Brown, 11 catches, a buck 61, and 2 touchdowns? Do I give it to Jameson Williams, 4 grabs, 124 yards, and 1 touchdown? I have never done this in the 2-year running history of the TMFINR Award. Lonzo, the entire Detroit Lions, the Lions offense, the Lions defense, the Lions coaching staff, the Lions staff, just the entire Detroit Lions. And I don't think that's, I think if I'm ever going to give out a team TMFINR award, that's the one right there. That's the one right there. These Lions ain't no joke. 28-22, the LA Rams knock off the New England Patriots last Sunday afternoon. Listen, I went back and forth on this one. I didn't know who to give it to. Because we got 2 wide receivers with 100 yards. Puka Nacua, 7 grabs, a buck 23, and a tutty. Cooper Kupp, 6, 106, and 2 tutties. Or do you give it to Matt Stafford, 18-27, 295, and 4 touchdowns through the air? I'm going to go Puka Nacua. Only the 1 touchdown, but that layout touchdown was the football game. It was one of the most elite diving catches I have ever seen. And out of a guy who has not played nearly every game so far this year, Puka Nacua bailed the Rams out of losing to the 3-8 Patriots at that point. Puka Nacua! Plus, I just like saying Puka Nacua.
I knew that's the real reason. And, you know, he may stop getting hurt so much if he quit. I mean, it was an amazing catch, but, I mean, dude.
I mean, he doesn't haul in that tutty. They don't score a tutty there. They lose that game. Body on the line. The Pittsburgh Steelers knock off the Baltimore Ravens 18-16. I didn't know who to give this to. I can't give it to Russell Wilson. Only 205 yards, 1 interception, no touchdowns. Nobody really stood out in the rushing game. Najee Harris had 63 yards on 18 carries, no touchdowns. George Pickens had 89 yards on 8 catches, no touchdowns. Ladies and gentlemen, you are here for history because for the first time in the history of the TMFINR Awards, it is going great one to a kicker, Chris Boswell, 6 of 6, including a 57-yarder. The Steelers recorded 18 points, and every one of them came off the foot of Chris Boswell. Kickers are people, too, and kickers sometimes aren't real. Chris Boswell, 38-6, Denver knocks off the Atlanta Falcons. I don't care what you have to say, Bo Nix. I have been hating on this cat. I have been slept on this cat. I have been busting this cat up. 28 of 33, 307 yards, and 4 touchdown passes for Captain Checkdown. He has been demoted from Captain Checkdown and promoted to Captain Killer. Bo Nix. Very quickly run through the last 3 Seattle 2017 winners over the 49ers. The stat lines don't show up for Geno Smith, 25 of 32, 221, no touchdowns, 1 interception. But man, that touchdown run that put the game away, put the team on his back, and carried him into the end zone. Geno Smith! I don't need to tell you about the Bills and the Chiefs. Josh Allen, Josh Allen, Josh Allen. And from last night, Joe Mixon, 20 carries, 109 yards, 3 tutties on the ground. Joe Mixon! There it is, your Tuesday morning TMFINR Awards for the week. You got anybody you want to submit as a TMFINR Award winner? Text them to me, 71307. Give me the name and the stat line you think earned a TMFINR. We are back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Yesterday, the Palmetto Bowl announced as an early kick. This game will take place at either 12 or 12:30. Live from Memorial Stadium, Death Valley, up in Clemson, South Carolina. When the Gamecocks and the Tigers get it on Rivalry Weekend. Zoe, I can't help but think that this is exactly what South Carolina wanted, right? Like, this has got to be the way you prefer it. If you're a Gamecock fan, you were talking about, and I know that we all have different ways of pre-gaming games, but a noon game is only going to provide fans a limited amount of time to build up the anticipation, right? And I don't know. I probably should. I don't know what time the tailgating capabilities of the Clemson Tigers begin. I know a couple of years ago when I went to South Carolina for this game in 2021? I don't remember. I think it was 21, actually. Doesn't matter. When I went to South Carolina for this game for the first time, I was kind of bummed out because at the time, and I don't know if this has changed since then, the Gamecocks only opened up the tailgating parking lots like 4 hours before the game. Didn't matter what it was, 7:30 game, they opened up at 3 o'clock. And I was like, why would you not open them early in the morning and let people come in here and like build the anticipation all day, right? The longer you let me tailgate, the more the anticipation builds, the more off the charts I am going to be when I finally get into the stadium and make some dadgum noise for the boys. This is, I think, a tremendous advantage. And I know that it is not something that is directly scheduled by the home team. But regardless of the reason it is at noon, this is a tremendous advantage for South Carolina. You are not going to get it's not going to not be loud, right? It's not going to not be over the top. It's still a fantastic rivalry game. And this year is going to have the highest stakes attached to this game that it's had since when? Ever?
Not ever. Long time ago. They both have been ranks playing each other before.
I understand that, but how many times has the potential, and I'm not saying it will or won't, we'll find out a lot more tonight. This game will be a lot more clear. The stakes of this game will be a lot more clear tonight. But there is absolutely the realistic possibility that the loser of this game, scratch that. I will say for certain, both of these teams on the outside looking in, both of these teams are long shots and will need quite a bit of help to get in. But the loser of this game loses their opportunity for an at-large bid in the playoffs. Clemson obviously still has a path to the ACC title game, though it is by no means a guarantee. South Carolina obviously does not have a path to the SEC championship game. But as I've said a bunch of times, the Gamecocks win out. They will be the most impressive three-loss team in America. And you add on to the fact that you get, and I'm not asking this, I'm telling you this as a statement of belief from me, and I believe fact, you get SEC bump bonus points from the College Football Playoff Selection Committee.
Is this the marquee game at noon? Because I wanted to see the schedule. It's because it's rivalry weekend.
Sure.
Michigan, Ohio State's also at noon. Let's see. Miami, Syracuse. No, that's at 3:30. Illinois, Northwestern. Tennessee, Vanderbilt. I mean, could be a good matchup, but that's about it.
Yeah, no stakes on that game, though.
Yeah, so Ohio State, Michigan, and South Carolina, Clemson. And I'd have to say the more important game is South Carolina and Clemson.
Here are the games that I think matter on that Friday and Saturday. And we'll look just at the Saturday noon slate. That we know, because there's a lot of games that are TBD still, right? On that Friday, on Black Friday, Oregon-Boise State matters a lot. Boise State cannot lose a game. If they do not lose a game, they will probably go win the Mountain West. They will probably be in. They will be in.
Are we looking at the right same?
I'm looking at Fridays.
Okay, because I see Oregon against Washington.
Oregon State, Boise State.
Okay.
Is Friday at noon. Oklahoma State, Colorado, same situation here. One of those teams this game matters a lot to. Colorado is inside track to win the Big 12. If Colorado wins the Big 12, they will not only be in the playoffs, they will get a bye. That game has enormous stakes. And this is obviously assuming that Boise State and Colorado both win on the way in. Georgia, Georgia Tech, not really much in the way of stakes on that game. Oregon, Washington, stakes on that game? I mean, Oregon can lose a game and still go to the Big Ten championship. So, yes and no. Indiana, Purdue, that game will have stakes. This game, TBD as well. That game will have stakes because Indiana can lose to Ohio State and still be in the Big Ten championship game, right? So, that game may matter unless they win this weekend against Ohio State, in which case it probably won't. Indiana's going to the Big Ten title game at that point. Notre Dame USC has stakes in that. Notre Dame can't lose another game. I think if they are a two-loss team, they could probably get dropped out of the top 12. Kansas State, Iowa State, don't know if it matters. Florida, Florida State. By the way, this is my favorite thing going right now.
Still a rivalry game, right?
I mean, yeah. Pride is on the line, sure. That nobody outside of those two schools gives a darn about. I will say this. I learned this stat yesterday, Lonzo. In all of college football, the Florida State Seminoles are the only team that has failed to score 21 points in any game. They are the only team in college football, the only team that has failed to score 21 points in at least one game. That's pretty spectacular for a team that was 13-0 in a Power 5 conference championship last year.
So you're telling me if Florida State were to beat Florida, it wouldn't be that big of a deal? I got to get in the scheme of things.
I mean, it would to Florida State fans.
Right.
It would to Florida fans. But no, in the national discussion, nobody cares. Why would you? These teams stink. Actually, Florida looked a lot better. I think Florida's going to beat Florida State by probably 35 points minimum. Doesn't matter. Looking at the rest of the slate for rivalry weekend, looking at the noon games, Michigan, Ohio State. Does it matter? Yeah, to Michigan and Ohio State. Does it matter in the grand scheme of things? Only in Ohio State's mind, in terms of potentially still having a ticket to the Big Ten championship on the line.
There's also the fact that they haven't beat Michigan in a while.
There is that. Again, I think that matters more to Ohio State fans than it does in the national scene. And it should matter a lot to you.
It can put doubt in your mind if a team just has your number year after year. And we know Michigan's down, but they won't be for this game.
If Michigan beats you this year, I'm on the Ryan Day's got to go train with you. If they beat you this year, that's got to happen.
Like at 3:30.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as that game's over, you lose Michigan, you should be out.
Tennessee Vanderbilt matters because Tennessee could very well be another one of those teams that is sitting there with an 8-2 record, looking at an at-large, potentially looking at a conference championship bid still being alive. Depends on how all the teams shake up to be tiebreakers. Louisville, Kentucky doesn't matter. South Carolina, Clemson, two teams looking for an at-large bid. And before he goes, wait a minute, Rob, Gamecocks have three losses. How would they be in it? Again, I told you last year, and this is why, especially if you are a fan of not an SEC team. Remember last year, everybody said, oh, Rob, you're just salty because Florida State. No. I told you. The reason I was salty was because this was a very, in my opinion, very, very clear illustration to all of us, demonstration to all of us, that the playoff selection committee and the TV networks that own them care more about brand than results. They care more about brand than they care about what you did all year. An SEC team gets a boost. That's why Alabama was in last year. They receive a boost. South Carolina gets that boost. Now, the problem you have if you're South Carolina, we've already talked about this a number of times so far this week. It's going to come up many more times, assuming South Carolina gets the win this weekend, and I'm assuming that they will, and this game is a three-loss South Carolina against a two-loss Clemson. South Carolina does not have the school branding power that Alabama, especially when Nick Saban at the helm, does. But you do have the SEC brand working for you. A three-loss South Carolina team could, depending on how many two-loss teams inside that top 17 teams take L's this week and next week, could be a threat for an at-large bid. And if they go to Clemson and they knock off a top 25 team in Clemson, that would be four top 25 out of wins out of the final five games to end the year. We also know the committee gives a crap about who you lose to, how you lose to them, and when. They also care who you beat and when. Four out of five final games being against top 25 teams and all of them being wins would be massive. I think they could sneak their way in. Outside of that, the rest of the noon games on Rivalry Day, even the rest of the 2 and 3 o'clock games, there's not really much in the way of stakes. Maryland, Penn State, because Penn State's trying to hang on to that at-large bid, maybe a Big Ten Conference Championship ticket. Miami at Syracuse. We talked about this one yesterday. If I'm Miami, I'm very concerned about having to go to upstate New York. I'm very concerned. That place can be a scary place to play for ranked teams, the JMA Wireless Dome. And Fran Brown's trying to make a name for himself. And Cuse has a knack to upset teams that are inside tracked. Miami will be playing for a berth to the ACC title game that day. That one's interesting. That one's at 3:30. The Iron Bowl doesn't much matter outside of Bama trying to hang on to an at-large spot and not let Peyton Thorne do what he did last week. Cal SMU matters because SMU's playing for an ACC title bid, right? If SMU goes to the ACC championship game as a one-loss team, but they lose that game, are they out?
Probably, because it's the ACC.
We gotta look at this.
Well, chances are they're going to play
Miami.
Yep. Unless something major happens.
If Miami loses to Wake Forest or Syracuse, which I don't put it past Mario Cristobal to lose to Wake or Syracuse, then Clemson could still be in.
Yeah.
But my question mark is, if they lose to a two-loss Clemson team, I probably think they're out. If they lose to a one-loss Miami team, I think they got a chance to be number 12.
It also depends on how they lose.
That is also fair. Arkansas, Mizzou, NC State, North Carolina, like a lot of the games in the afternoon don't matter. There is one more game that matters quite a bit. Texas A&M, Kyle Field, College Station, the compound, the Colt. That game's going to matter a lot because I don't know. If you take your second loss, but you take it in the final week of the season and it bumps you out of a conference championship game, I could see Texas getting dropped and A&M taking that spot and jumping in. So that game matters a lot. Oklahoma-LSU would have mattered if LSU didn't lose because they were in a position to have a tiebreaker if it went that chaotic. I don't think that game matters anymore. This is a rivalry weekend that's got probably seven games that truly matter on the national scale. Now, obviously, they all matter because it's rivalry weekend, and we love rivalry weekend. But it's got probably seven games that actually impact how everything plays out in the 12-team playoff. All right, we'll talk more about this later on in the show, later on in the week, later on in the season. Texter said Miami gave up 38 to California and 40 to Louisville. Miami should be concerned about playing anybody. I agree. Wake is a team that is always prepared. Don't have the athletic talent to run with you if you play disciplined football. You get undisciplined. And let's be real, that's Miami. You get undisciplined, they'll snipe you. And like I said, Syracuse at Syracuse worries me a lot for Miami. Miami of the Power 5 teams, Miami is the one team right now that has a don't lose and you go situation in front of them that I am the most apprehensive about. About buying into, about believing in, etc. All right, when we come back, Audio Blitz, best audio we've heard since the last time we did the Audio Blitz. Coming up to end the next hour, a segment that we have not done in a very long time that I have been toying with the idea of bringing back, and I decided, YOLO, let's try it. Faces and Heels makes its triumphant return to end the next hour of the show. Much to the pleasure, the joy that happened. And Lonzo texted me late last night. He's like, can we do Faces and Heels tomorrow? I was like, you're absolutely right, we can. Great one. You're absolutely right, we can. So we got that coming up for you. And news about the Pop-Tarts Bowl. All coming up after Lonzo reads this sports flash.
That was asleep by like 8:20, so I know it wasn't me. Pittsburgh Pirates ace Paul Skeens was named Major League Baseball's NL Rookie of the Year alongside Yankees Luis Gil. Skeens beat out Jackson Merrill and Jackson Chorios, while Gil beat out Austin Wells and Colton Crouser. I can't say it's Crouser. Come on, Reed, for the award. Team USA Men's Soccer was cruised to the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals with a 4-2 win last night and a 5-2 aggregate win over Jamaica in the quarterfinals. The Nations League semifinals will take place next June. I don't know what aggregate means. I think it has something to do with cows and fields. Tune in this Saturday at 1:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Mercer Bears. It's Furman versus Mercer right here on your home for Paladins football. It's a final game of the season right here on the Fan Upstate.